They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The U.S. housing market keeps on cooling. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. We've got some housing data out this morning. Things are continuing to slow down. Residential home starts fell 9% in February. Permits for future construction fell 2%. Meanwhile, home prices nationally grew at a 4.3% annualized rate in January, which is actually the slowest growth in prices we've seen since April of 2015. Some economists are not surprised. The nasty weather could have easily slowed things down. But what should we make of this? Julian Emanuel is Managing Director and Chief Equity and Derivatives Strategist with BTIG. Good morning.
Good morning.
People, obviously, who own homes are not super pleased when prices don't go up as fast as they otherwise might. But, I mean, if you're looking to buy a house or have any sliver of a hope of buying a house, isn't this good news?
Absolutely. The fact that price increases are the slowest in several years really is a very important silver lining, because one of the issues that's caused part of the slowdown in the housing market is affordability, particularly for first-time buyers and millennials. And this data today tells you that that problem is about to get a little bit better incrementally. And when you combine that with mortgage rates, really near multi-year lows, given the drop in longer-term yields, there is a positive message here, and we think that ultimately it's going to be one of recovery.
Julian Emanuel, Managing Director and Chief Equity and Derivatives Strategist for BTIG, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 216 points. That is 0.8%. The S&P 500 is also up 0.8%. The NASDAQ's up 0.9%. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.44%, and Apple stock is up 1.6% after its big launch event yesterday, where, for the first time, there were no new iPhones, no new Macs, Apple Watches, other devices. It only premiered one new piece of tangible hardware, and it was a credit card. Marketplace's Ben Bradford reports that the Apple Card slides into the slew of new services that the company hopes will generate an increasing portion of its profits.
Apple's Jennifer Bailey kicked off the announcement with a typically Apple statement.
We have completely rethought the credit card.
It is made from titanium, but otherwise it's a no-annual fee MasterCard that offers 1% cash back. Apple calls it daily cash. Maybe the most unconventional part is Apple's offering double rewards to encourage cardholders not to swipe it.
Every time you pay with your iPhone or Apple Watch, you'll get 2% of the purchase amount in daily cash.
That reward makes sense when you consider yesterday's other announcements: TV, gaming, and magazine subscriptions. Annette Zimmerman at the research firm Gartner says iPhone sales are slowing, and Apple's looking to make money by expanding the services it can sell for its devices.
They want you to spend as much time as possible on their platform, and that's not easy.
In other words, Apple is rethinking the credit card as a way to keep people using its phones. I'm Ben Bradford for Marketplace.
A group of major music labels is suing cable internet company Charter Communications over online copyright infringement. The music industry is arguing that Charter profits from music piracy by failing to cancel the accounts of subscribers who illegally download music.
James in Bridgewater, New Jersey, wrote to express his appreciation for the way that Marketplace presents business and economic news at the everyman and everywoman level and offers insights not provided by other news outlets. Now, if you agree with James, please join him as a Marketplace investor by donating online at marketplace.org. Thanks to James and everyone who makes our work possible.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
A lot of policy gets done, like made real, around tax season. One of the big ones, though it may not be a household name, is the Earned Income Tax Credit. It's a program for low-income Americans that both gives them assistance and incentivizes work. It's also one of the rare items that seems to enjoy bipartisan support, or at least tolerance. And there are periodic calls to improve and expand it. Marketplace senior economics contributor Chris Farrell joins us. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
So remind everyone, what is the Earned Income Tax Credit, EITC?
So the Earned Income Tax Credit is a reward for working for low-income working families. So for a family with one child that's low income, the maximum credit's around $3,500. And it is a wage supplement that works through the tax system. And it has been very effective at increasing the labor force participation rate of low-income mothers with children.
And presumably this is why it's fairly popular among both liberals and conservatives, because it only kicks in if you work. And the more you work, the more you get, up to a point.
It's always been popular in that sense because, again, you have to be working in order to take advantage of the Earned Income Tax Credit. And 97% of the EIT dollars go to low-earning working families with children. And research shows that, you know, most of this money goes to pay for necessities, home repair, and even some of the money goes for additional education. The problem is there's a big gap with the EITC. Many adults without dependents also struggle from paycheck to paycheck, but the maximum benefit for what the government calls childless low-income workers is about $500. And among childless workers, you only qualify between the ages of 25 and 64. So if you're younger than that, you're excluded. And if you're older than age 64, you're also excluded.
Are there any serious calls to change that?
You know, there have been serious calls, both by conservative legislatures and liberal legislatures. And recently, economists Alicia Minnell and Abigail Waters, they put out a proposal. And what they would do is increase the maximum benefit for a childless worker to $2,000. The other thing they would do is say, look, people between 21 and 24, they're eligible for the Earned Income Tax Credit. And people 65 to 70 who are working more, often with low income, they will also be eligible.
How much would that cost, though? I mean, to expand it in that way?
Right. So their estimate is about $300 billion over 10 years. That sounds like a lot, but it is such a minuscule fraction of the total federal government's budget. But the other thing is, and this is important, is that it's a deal if you consider that the cost would largely be offset by other taxes, lower unemployment, less poverty, and decreased public assistance.
Marketplace senior economics contributor Chris Farrell, always good to talk to you.
Thanks a lot.
Our producers are Victoria Craig, Michael Lipkin, Candice Manriquez-Wren, Janaki Mehta, Daniel Shin, and Sasha Woodruff. I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.